Morales to do the noise. Straight to the title, John. What did I tell you? The Denver series, cakewalk. It was a cakewalk, John. Easy in five.
Well, it kind of turned out that way. But, man, you know what I realized after watching this weekend? If you have LeBron on your team.
Oh, forget it. He's ridiculous.
I mean, the fact that anybody could doubt this guy. I mean, he is a one-man ticket to the finals.
Honestly, John, I found that fourth quarter on Saturday night to be just absolutely dominating for LeBron. I mean, he scored, I think it was 16 points in the fourth quarter of that game. 12 straight, four unassisted baskets. I mean, it was just a clinic. It was an absolute clinic. It was winning time, and LeBron showed up to win.
And now he's in the finals for the 10th time in 17 years.
Crazy.
That means if you have LeBron in your team, you have a better than 50% chance of going to the finals because he's done it with three different teams.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I believe it or not, I think LeBron, in a lot of ways, is underrated.
100% underrated. I know. Taken for granted.
Right. He's the most talked about guy. But, I mean, if the ultimate goal is to get to the NBA Finals, he puts you there almost by nature of – it doesn't matter who else is on your team.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, he really is. I mean, I hope Laker fans know what they're watching because he has been – everything as advertised and then some to get the Lakers back in the second year. And I heard all this stuff, Mace. I heard he won't be able to do it in the Western Conference. I heard he's coming out here for business reasons. He doesn't care about basketball anymore.
Right.
None of it true.
Nope.
None of it.
None of it.
I mean, there's so many people that were criticized that that this could
so
not
many criticized
be done.
LeBron, right.
No, not just LeBron. I mean, you know, Rob Pelinka was getting killed.
Oh,
I mean,
no, every – oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, Frank Vogel. Frank Vogel's not the first choice, blah, blah, blah. I mean, I'm just so happy for these guys.
Well, you credit Jeannie Buss. You credit Rob Pelinka. You credit the organization that put this team together and put them on the floor. And they came through a very dark period. I mean, that was like one of the darkest periods since I've been in town for the Lakers, and they sailed right through it, and now they're in the NBA Finals for the first time in a decade, and they have really proved an awful lot of doubters. I'm talking about the organization now. An awful lot of doubters, and at times me, wrong. They had a path. They had decisions to make. They knew what they wanted, and they got it. And it has proved to be right. A lot of people owe them an apology at this point.
Well, and so many people jumped all in with the Clippers. You know, people would call our show and be on our show and say, well, see, the Clippers are a model organization. They're building with like 7 or 8 levels of executives, and they've got a championship coach in Doc Rivers, blah, 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 blah. None of it was true.
No.
None of it. None of the criticism of LeBron, of Vogel, of Pelinka. I mean, it just wasn't. And I'm just so happy for those guys that. And you know, the great thing about being a Laker fan is, and I'll use you as an example.
Yes.
You feel the Dodgers should be celebrated for winning division titles.
Now, I think they should be celebrated. You constantly take that out of context.
Go ahead.
I think they should be celebrated as an organization, as a team that gets, as an organization that gets their team in position to potentially win every year.
Here's the difference. If the Dodgers, and Rob Pelinka would be the first person to tell you this, if the Lakers don't beat Miami, the season's a failure.
100%.
So why isn't that true for the Dodgers?
Because baseball is a different game. It doesn't work that way.
All right. Well, it's a discussion for a different day. But although, strangely.
No, it's a discussion for any time. Because the Dodgers are about to start in the playoffs Wednesday night. By the way, could you not juggle those games a little bit? I mean, they know they're winding up with Dodgers on at the same time as Lakers, which is terrible. Just juggle the games a little bit so that people in Los Angeles can sit and watch both games. Because otherwise, it's a Sophie's choice for an awful lot of fans.
Right. Well, it's not. I think because the Lakers are in the finals and it's game one for the Dodgers, most people are going to go to the Lakers. But what's interesting is they could have put the Lakers on or the Dodgers on in the daytime. but they set the schedule before last night. And so when Miami, I know everybody in LA baseball was rooting for the Celtics last night because
correct,
that would have moved. That would have moved the Dodgers. That would have left the night open for the Dodgers.
Yes.
But instead, now the Lakers are going to tip off at 6, and the Dodgers are going to have first pitch at 7.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which we'll get to. It's the craziest sports week I've ever seen.
It's unbelievable. It really is.
Unbelievable. Tonight, you have the best Monday night football game probably since Rams Chiefs. What was that?
Yep.
2 years ago?
2 years ago.
So you get the best Monday night game in 2 years. Tomorrow day and night, this baseball playoff tournament starts, and there's just games on it every minute of every day. Wednesday, we get game one in the NBA Finals, game one for the Dodgers. We've never seen a week like this in LA sports history. The Rams should have won yesterday. They got hosed.
Oh, they got screwed.
So there's just so much stuff.
Yeah.
But at the top of the pyramid is the fact that the Lakers, in spite of every criticism you can imagine,
yep,
from ownership to GM to coach to star player, just ignored all of it and made it back to the NBA Finals,
yeah,
for a record,
yeah,
32nd time. It's incredible that and LeBron gets ton. If we were doing a credit pie, LeBron gets at least half of it, if not more. He's almost indescribably.
Oh, that's a good idea. A credit pie. Credit pie.
So if I had to do a credit pie off the top of my head, I would say LeBron 50%.
LeBron 50%. Wow.
50%. Because think about it, if you take LeBron out,
yep,
do we have any chance of making it?
No.
Yeah, LeBron was. And LeBron, I think because LeBron is here, it helped us get Anthony Davis.
Right.
You know, Davis wanted to play with LeBron. And so they were able to orchestrate that trade. I would say 25% to the front office, whether you want to determine that as Genie, as Rob, whoever stuck with this plan in the front office and had the guts to, in the face of criticism from everyone, including our station, let's be honest. I mean, everybody at our station was killing them. They said, you know what? We know what we're doing. And
yep,
this is how we can get back to the finals. So I'd give 25% to them. I would give 10% to the coaching staff / the dynamic between Vogel and Jason Kidd. Remember how many people said the first time the Lakers lose three games,
yeah,
in a row,
Frank Vogel better have eyes in the back of his head.
He ignored all of it.
Yep.
Kidd and Vogel are actually very tight. They built this great, coaching staff. And then I've got 10% left. You can't leave AD out. I would give him all 10, but you got to give it to the rest of the team. Because maybe I take 5 of LeBron's and just give it to AD so he has some of his own.
Yeah, he should have some of his own.
So you could say AD has at least 15%.
I believe he did score 28 a game in the series.
Right. But and we couldn't get there without him. There's a Shaq and Kobe dynamic there.
Sure, sure.
So let's say 50% to LeBron and AD.
50%, yep.
We'll include both of them.
Good.
And then 10% to the rest of the team. That's how we do it. Would you alter your credit pie at all?
I would give the front office more credit.
More than 25%?
Because they are the ones that pulled the trigger on the Anthony Davis deal. Remember
they got hammered for that? You gave up Lonzo. You gave up Ingram. You gave up way too much. It's a terrible deal. That you mortgaged your future. How do you feel now?
Yeah.
You know, they are positioned. And Mace, I don't think they're just going to be favored to win the title this year.
No, they're already the favorites for next year.
I think that next year, depending on what the Warriors look like, you remember the Lakers are going to have cap space next year.
Right, right.
And we've seen how aggressive Pelinka is.
Well, and they've got guys that, apparently KCP, Avery, Bradley, Rondo, a number of guys are going to opt in.
Right. So good. Bring them all back.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, this group is a really, really solid group. And, of course, LeBron is just, forget it. It's just unreal.
Yeah.
Anybody
who rips LeBron is can't be watching the games.
No,
I mean,
no.
At times he was, like, their best defensive player.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He affects games more than anybody I've seen since Shaq. You mean you can't guard him.
Yeah.
He does whatever he wants. He's just great. He's just an unbelievable generational star.
Yep. All right. Want to let you know all the stuff that is coming up today. Clay Helton, USC head coach, is going to join us at 1:30 today. We know now there's going to be a Pac-12 season, a Pac-12 schedule coming out at some point this week, and potentially a team from the Pac-12 going to the college football playoff. We'll talk to Coach Helton about that. Alex Caruso will join us at 2 o'clock on the dot. Make sure you're here for that. And then Keyshawn Johnson joins us at 3 with a complete breakdown of everything in the NFL. And we'll get his take on the Lakers, obviously. So all that stuff is coming up for you. Coming up next, John, did you hear the movie that Anthony Davis and LeBron James compared their relationship to?
No.
I will play that stuff for you next. Mason, Ireland, 710 ESPN.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We have LeBron. You guys don't. Mason Ireland, 710 ESPN. I'm speaking to Miami there. So what's going on? It is a monster Monday, one of the busiest, most historic sports weeks of our careers in Los Angeles history going on right now as the Lakers have advanced to the NBA Finals and the Dodgers start their quest for a World Series Wednesday night at Dodger Stadium against the Milwaukee Brewers. So yesterday or Saturday after the game, there was some conversation with LeBron James and with Anthony Davis about what sort of movie their relationship is like. Here's what LeBron said.
You've seen the movie Step Brothers before, right? Well, there it is. Yeah, I'm Will Ferrell for sure. I get on his nerves a lot, for sure. I go in and mess with his drums and everything when he's not watching you. Yeah, that's me. I get on his nerves a lot.
And here is AD on LeBron being the Will Ferrell of this team.
Yeah, I mean, we're kind of like stepbrothers. I mean, man, very close. He could be Will Ferrell, actually. But he leads the team, man. He actually is Will Ferrell. He leads the team. He's in charge of the group.
LeBron James is Will Ferrell.
All right, admission.
Yeah.
I've never seen Step Brothers.
Oh, get out of here.
I haven't
seen
Step
Brothers. You've got to watch it. You've got to sit down and watch that thing.
I've seen it like while I'm doing something else.
It's just a big dumb laugh. It's just a big dumb laugh fest. It is so friggin' funny. But that's what they are comparing their relationship. You mentioned in the last segment, John, about LeBron James and people who questioned whether or not he was coming to Los Angeles to win a championship, or he was just moving his home base to Los Angeles to build the rest of his empire. He spoke to that after the game Saturday night.
I heard all the conversations and everything that was said about why did I decide to come to LA, the reason I came to LA, it was not about basketball and all those conversations of, I mean, just, you know, naysayers and things of that nature, but I understood that. And with the season last year and with my injury, it just gave him more, you know, more sticks and more wood to throw in the fire to continue to say the things that they would say about me. But it never stopped my journey. It never stopped my mindset. It never stopped my goal. And I'm happy, like I said, and proud of this organization and proud of my teammates. I'm proud of the coaching staff, the front office, and our ownership as well, you know, at this very moment today.
And by the way, you know, you also have to credit LeBron. At no point did he express any concern about what was going on while the Lakers were going through some issues. He was right there, stood in there, collaborated with Rob Pelinka. We talked to Rob on Media Day, and Rob talked about how he was in contact with LeBron James and Anthony Davis all summer as they put together this team around them. LeBron never lost it, never got upset, never said anything remotely critical of the organization, because he knew there was a future here. He could see that if they made that Anthony Davis trade, and we all sat and waited for that trade and waited for that trade, and when it finally happened, LeBron smelled it. He knew he's on a championship team.
And, you know, anybody who was accusing LeBron of coming to L.A. for reasons other than basketball hasn't studied LeBron. LeBron's big thing is that he always says, you got to keep the main thing the main thing. In other words, what basketball is driving all of his other stuff.
Right.
And he knows that if he's not on the biggest stage and in the finals and winning titles, that all the other stuff is going to suffer. So just because he was coming out here to do some other things doesn't mean that he had deprioritized basketball. And if you watch that game, that clinching game five the other night, that was anybody's game to take in the fourth quarter. And frankly, Mace, LeBron just took it.
He took it.
LeBron just said, I'm going to guard the other team's best player. Give me the ball. Get out of the way. I'm bringing it home. And it's going to be fascinating because Jimmy Butler is much the same way. He's not as good as LeBron is, but his mentality is the same. It's, give me the ball, I'll lead you to a win. They've played 34 times. Each guy's won 17. The difference is, we have AD.
Right.
Now, they have Bam Adebayo, who might one day be AD, but he's not yet.
He's not there yet, but I'll tell you, he's a pretty special player.
He's great. And, you know, Hero's great. And Duncan Robinson's great.
They got shooters.
So it's not a cakewalk. You're going to come on the air and say it is, but it. I think it's my.
What makes you think I'm going to come on the air and call it a cakewalk, John?
Gee, I wonder what would make me think that.
I've been right so far.
But well, they've gone 5-5-5.
Yeah.
This is Lakers in 7 or 6.
This is Lakers in 5.
Again.
Yeah,
you think
Lakers
they're
going to
go 5-5-5-5 for the title?
I absolutely do. By the way, apparently Michael Thompson was on the station today because we did a special show with Travis
Rob
with
Palenka
Alan
was on today.
Yeah, Rob Palenka was on. We'll play some of that. But Michael Thompson went on there and said Lakers in 5.
Yeah, I think it's 6 or 7. I think the Lakers are going to win it. They just seem dialed in.
You're always so conservative. Just go for it, John. It's cakewalk. Pick a piece of cake. What kind of cake do you want?
There will be no cake until this thing is over.
How about some
I'm dead serious
German
about
chocolate
this.
Cake. You love German chocolate cake.
But I'm dead serious about this.
Yeah.
Your attitude about the Dodgers that winning divisions and getting to the playoffs should be celebrated, the Lakers are having none of that. None of it. They just, if they don't, like, this is one thing I love about Palenka. From the beginning, he has said the only thing that matters is winning the title.
Right.
We don't win the title, everything else. And so because they set that as the bar, I think their focus is going to be laser-like in these finals.
Right.
That's why I'm picking them. I think that they, frankly, Miami is, is it fair to say surprised to be there? I mean, it doesn't mean they can't win.
Right.
But nobody
But they're unexpected.
Them.
Yeah, right. They're unexpected.
The Lakers not only expected to be there, but they think that if they lose, the season is a failure. They know LeBron's window is limited.
Right.
And so I think that you're going to see a Laker team very similar to the one you saw against Denver that's just dialed in.
Yes.
But Miami's a little better than Denver. At least they're playing better. So I think it's Lakers in 6.
You know, you're not a big chemistry culture guy.
Because I was kind of grew up in the Shaq Kobe Lakers dominance, and that team had zero off the court chemistry. I mean, you can read about it. It's well documented.
It was not fun.
But on the court, they meshed well together, and I think that's all that matters.
But I think this team is fueled in part by how much they like playing together. This team is fueled in part by the enthusiasm and the energy that comes a lot of times from the bench during games. I mean, they just have more fun than everybody else. That's the way I look. Like the Clippers, for example, never looked like they were having any fun. Never showed, I don't think, any enthusiasm. I don't think that they clicked in any way. They established chemistry.
Well, you're right about the Lakers bench, but you know who else has a bench like that is Miami. If you watch those guys, they're super into it.
Yeah.
So I think you're going to get two teams that are here.
Two enthusiastic benches?
but it, I don't think it, I mean, isn't this going to be decided by the guys at the top?
Of course.
You know, LeBron, LeBron and AD, if they play like LeBron and
Jimmy
AD,
Butler and Bam Adebayo, those are the guys. And if everybody plays
if
to their potential.
If Hero has a game like that 37-point game he had against Boston, it could win a game for the Heat.
He's a baby-faced assassin. That's what he is.
Yeah, really good player.
Yeah, really good.
It'll be interesting to see who guards him. My guess is it'll be KCP, or Danny Green, somebody like that. Caruso will get some minutes on him. But if he gets hot, or if Jimmy Butler gets hot, we know the club Frank Vogel can play. He's got LeBron.
Yes, he does.
Put LeBron on him.
It's winning time. All right, coming up next for you, I was so excited that there is going to be a Pac-12 football season after all. It was originally canceled and put on ice, and then it was revived, and there was a vote of the chancellors and ADs last week, and they agreed to a 7-game season starting in November. We'll talk to Coach Clay Helton from USC about the 2020 college football season and where the Trojans stand in all of it. Next, Mason Ireland, 710 ESPN.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.
We're going to get some college football at the Coliseum. The USC Trojans at some point in November, early in November, will open a 7-game schedule against the Pac-12. And that should, we don't know what's going to happen exactly, but that should qualify the Pac-12 for the college football playoff. It's fewer games. It's going to be more difficult to judge a team that perhaps comes out of the Pac-12 at 7-0. And do you go a 7-0 USC team or an 11-1 LSU team? Although LSU didn't look very good this week. You know, that's going to be a difficult choice for the college football playoff. They're supposed to judge the team and how they're playing and who they played more than necessarily the outcomes of those games. So if USC is playing well, if somebody from the Pac-12 is playing well, regardless of the fact that it's 7 games, I think they should get to the college football playoff.
I have a feeling that the Pac-12 is too good for any team to come out 7-0.
Oh, don't say it. We need one, finally. We need one.
Yeah, I.
It depends on the schedule, by the way. We have no idea what 7 teams anybody's going to play.
I still think, can you think of any combination of a schedule that would allow a team to go 7-0? Like, Oregon or USC would probably have the best chance, but that's a pretty impressive winning streak if either one of them pull that off.
Yeah, but I mean, that is what it'll take, and that is what happens in other conferences.
Well, let's put that question to the coach. Clay, nice enough to join us. Clay, how you holding up in these crazy times?
Doing good, guys. Great to hear from you. Exciting time.
All right, so you've got to get a team ready now to play in November. Let me start with this. Will you alter what you traditionally do? In other words, you might go full contact a little bit earlier or later, or do you make the adjustments so you can protect against injury? Other than the COVID restrictions, which obviously you have to follow, will you alter what you would normally do to get ready for a short season like this?
Well, you know, we've had a little bit of luxury and had some help, not only from the university, but the county as far as being able to get guys in functional football shape. You know, we've been on campus since July 6th and have been in training mode basically for the last 2 months. And then the NCAA really, really helped us out a couple weeks ago as far as giving us 12 hours and being able to actively work with the kids in skill development, being able to use football equipment to be able to get them in functional football shape. So now we're sitting here 6 weeks out in good shape and have the opportunity really to implement schemes now. You know, we've basically got 2 weeks right now of kind of an OTA 20-hour format where we're able to implement schemes, still do skill development, still be able to have walkthroughs in strength and conditioning still. And those 2 weeks will lead up to training camp, and that's going to be a four-week period coming into November 7th. So we're in a good place, but these next 6 weeks are definitely critical, and we'll need every second we got to prepare.
Coach Clay Helton is with us from USC, Mason Ireland, 710 ESPN. So you've stayed in touch with your team through this entire period. What was it like in that sort of limbo state where maybe there will be a season or maybe there won't? What were you communicating with your players during that time?
Yeah, probably the hardest time, guys, was the March through June period because the players were at home, and I was really thankful to the university for the resources that they provide as far as, you know, nutrition, strength equipment, tutorial services, rehab services. They gave them the resources to continue their daily routine and try to function at a high level as a student athlete. And then, you know, just you breathe a sigh of relief being able to get guys back on campus come July. And we were really proactive in July and August in trying to get these guys at a slow pace back into functional football shape. And you breathe a sigh of relief once they get back to you so you can actually see where they are, see how long it's going to take to get them where they need to be. And we've really invested these last 2 months in trying to get these guys where they can go out onto the field and think about starting a training camp.
Clay Helton, the head football coach at USC, is with us. Clay, I don't think you'd argue with me if I told you that USC football games are unique. It's an event as much as it is a game. You have Traveler, you have the band, you have the Song Girls, you have an alumni that's been going to games for 50 years. It really is a unique experience. Now you're going to be playing with no fans. Now the whole country has to deal with it, but the whole country isn't USC. The whole country doesn't have what you have. Do you suffer more than other schools by not having fans?
Well, I think we all right now are just so grateful to have the game. You know, I've got 110 plus kids right now that think it's Christmas because they're going to get the opportunity to play the game that they love. And coaches too, we're all smiling in the office right now, you know, just because we have purpose and you have that goal out there of be preparing for November 7th. You know, and it is going to be different. I mean, you look at the across the country right now. I was a college football and pro football fan all this weekend. And just to be able to get to the point where other teams are right now, I'm excited about. Our players are excited about. Yeah, it's going to be different. But you know what? For the way 2020 has been, to be able to get to this point and be able to compete and compete for championships and play the game we love, we just feel grateful for the opportunity, to be honest with you.
Coach Clay Helton from USC is with us. Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN. You have got a great quarterback. I mean, I watched him a lot last year. He set a freshman record for passing at USC, threw for over 3,500 yards, 30 touchdowns. Tell us what your expectations are for his growth this year.
Well, I can't wait to watch it. You know, to have a Keaton Slovis and the weapons that he has around him, both at the wide receiver position and the backfield, it's one of those skill groups that you go, wow, this is a special group, and Keaton leads the way in that. You know, I've had the great fortune of being here now over a decade and having the chance to be with a Matt Barkley and a Cody Kessler and a Sam Darnold, and here comes Keaton Slovis. And the kid for a freshman last year, a true freshman, having to basically start in the second game of the season and take over a team and watch him progress and get better from week to week, I was thoroughly impressed, and I thought he played his best football in the second half of the season. And as he grew, we grew as a team. And one of the things that Graham always tells me, he says, "Coach, man, I can't wait to show you your two of this offense, because now you're going to see guys that the chemistry and being able to really jump into this offense and execute at a high level. I mean, it was the sixth best passing offense in the country last year, so I can't wait to watch it this year. But those guys are already on the field. They're pitching and catching, and you can see Keaton, how much faster he's pulling the trigger, how much better chemistry he has with the guys now, receiving core that just only lost one individual, Michael Pittman, who was a great player, but brings back, seven, eight receivers that are elite. And so it's going to be fun to watch. It really is. As a quarterback coach by trade and a college football fan, to have Keaton Slovis at the helm, you couldn't ask much more.
All right, last thing for me, Clay. I know you don't know your schedule yet, but you're going to miss at least four teams in the Pac-12, mm-hmm. Which is not normal. Normally, you'll play nine mm-hmm. or ten of them a year. I'm curious if you have a strong feeling about how they should do it. In other words, they could do it geographically. They could keep you close, maybe mm-hmm. have you play the Arizona schools. UCLA is probably a mm-hmm. given. Or they could put Oregon and Washington in some of the other power schools, which might give you a better chance to get into the mm-hmm. national conversation. What's your feeling mm-hmm. on scheduling, and what are you hoping for?
Well, I think what's going to end up happening is, we're going to end up playing our typical South schedule. The North will play the North schedule, so you can declare a South champion, a North champion, and we will go across the line and play a North school this year. I do not know which North school that will be. You're going to have six conference games. Five of them are going to be South. One of them are going to be from the North.
Okay.
And each game is going to be critical. I mean, each game is magnified times two, you got to put your best foot forward. Not only do you have to win, you have to win convincingly each and every time if you want to put the best resume together and try to put yourself in that conference championship and hopefully get a seventh win. So it's going to be really interesting, and I truly believe each and every game, especially with a short season, is you got to treat like a championship game, because it could cost you a championship game if you don't bring your A game.
All right. Well, listen, Coach, I am. We're very excited to see the Pac-12 back in action. We it's a sports buffet right now. We got everything in the world happening at the same time. Now we add Pac-12 football and USC football on top of everything else. It's a crazy period in LA sports, and we look forward to seeing you back on the field at the Coliseum.
It'll be a lot of fun, guys. Thanks so much for having me today. Take care.
Thank you, Clay.
Here's Coach Clay Helton.
Okay, so that answers that question, Mace. They're going to play the South.
And then
they'll get it'll either be Stanford, they'll get one of these, Stanford, Cal, Oregon, Oregon State, Washington, Washington State. And then if they come out of the South, they would play another North game against the champ.
I'd like to nominate Oregon State as the team we play from the North. What do you think?
I think you're a chicken. No, I think you'd be – no, in all seriousness, because I know you're a USC fan,
yeah.
You'd be better playing Oregon, because if you beat them, that puts you – that.
Why not beat them in the Pac-12 championship game?
Because you could knock them out of it. And then you could get two quality wins.
Yeah. I think running the table is the priority. Obviously, they have no control over which opponent they're going to draw.
Right.
But I would rather play,
for TV purposes, somebody in that office should make USC Oregon happen.
That wouldn't be fair.
It'd be fun.
Yeah, it'd be fun, but it wouldn't
screw
be fair.
I want a watch. Saturday night SC Oregon, man.
Watch, USC will draw Oregon, and UCLA will draw Oregon State.
Yeah, but UCLA's probably going 3-4 anyway.
You have them going 3-4. Yeah, Chip Kelly's not making any progress at all over there.
Wait a minute, 3-4 is progress. That's
3-4.
That's a game under 500.
Oh, that's good for you're right. That's good for UCLA. You gotta take your wins there. All right, coming up next for you, we haven't talked about it yet, but the Rams game finished on a trash call. Just a trash call. We'll get to that coming up next for you. Reminder, at 2 o'clock, Alex Caruso from the Lakers is going to be here. So 20 minutes away from Alex Caruso, Mason Ireland, 710 ESPN. Mason Ireland, 710 ESPN. What's going on? By the way, those scrappy little nuggets, do you know they finished the postseason under 500? They finished 10-11.
Yeah. They because they came back from 3-1 deficits in all their other games,
and you got to admit, John, that was a cakewalk.
It was not a cakewalk.
It was a cakewalk.
Denver was better than I thought they'd be.
All right, so much cake on Saturday night.
Yeah, you send a thank you note to LeBron, because he basically took that.
He's the guy. What do you mean? Who do you think I'm betting on?
But
all right, so end of the Rams game yesterday. First of all, we should mention the Rams fell down 28-3 in the game with the Bills in Buffalo yesterday. Sure.
I played golf yesterday morning, and my plan was to tape the Ram game and watch it when I got home.
Yes.
And I forgot to tape it, so when I got back, I turned it on, and it was 28-3.
Yep.
And I went, I got to do some work. I'll just leave it on in the background.
And by the way, the Rams have never come back from a deficit that big.
Mace, it was the third best comeback in NFL history. It was equivalent to the Patriots' comeback against the Falcons in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, you're right.
The only other one that's out there is that Houston-Buffalo game. It would have been unbelievable. And I feel, personally, that the Rams got absolutely hosed on this deal.
Yep.
I'll let you kind of lay out and describe what happened, but I think the refs took a game from the Rams here, completely stole it.
Okay, so they had the Bills 4th and 8.
So we should say they come all the way back from being down 28-3.
Yeah, and they lead 32-28 at this point.
Right.
4th and 8, last shot for Josh Allen. And here's the way the call sounded.
4th down and 9. Bills have to get it or the Rams win. They're looking for the 5-yard line for a new set of downs or the end zone to take the lead. 25 seconds left. Hard count from Allen. Play clock at 4. Back to throw. Here comes the rush. Checks it middle. It's incomplete.
Oh.
It's incomplete, but a flag. A late flag thrown from the left sideline. McVay going ballistic with 21 seconds left. He can't believe it.
What flag is this?
Pass interference, defense number 31. Best place at the spot of the foul. First down, Buffalo.
It goes against Darius Williams.
Wow.
The Bills have another chance with 21 seconds and 2 timeouts left.
And, of course, they would cash it in. The Rams, I think, should have won that game. There was lots of hand fighting between Darius Williams and Gabriel Davis, but you don't end a game like that. And I would argue that Gabriel Davis was pushing Darius Williams as much as Darius Williams was pushing Gabriel Davis. To me, that's a no call.
You cannot, on a 4th and 9, with the game on the line, take that kind of ownership of a game if you're that official.
Yep.
You can't. It's got to be clear, without a question, pass interference. And I think it was Mike Pereira who they brought in, or I'm trying to remember who the
yeah, it was Mike Pereira. He was the officiating guy.
And
he agreed with the call.
And he came in and he said, I think I would have called pass interference. You got to be definitive there, man. You can't be, I think. You can't be, the game is on the line. It's, you know, it's not first down. They don't get 3 more cracks at it.
Right.
You're handing the game to the Buffalo Bills if you make that call. And I just thought it was a BS call, and I looked at it, Mace, I looked at it.
Yep.
They showed 10 replays. I rewound it. Could I make an argument that was maybe pass interference? It's probably 50-50, but you can't in that situation throw that flag. You can't do it. And I don't blame the Rams for being furious.
So we'll talk to Keyshawn at 3 o'clock. About this, because Key he thinks the call was BS. We'll get to that with him coming up from Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin from this morning. He'll be on at 3. And here's what Stephen A. Smith, and do you have this, Jorge? Here's what Stephen A. Smith said about the call earlier this morning on First Take.
Well, first of all, if the game is decided by an official in most people's eyes, that would qualify as being robbed. And that's why I believe they were robbed, because they were down by 25 points. They came back. They had the lead. Okay, here you are in a situation where, what was it? Was it third? What was it?
4th and 8.
4th and 8, right? Gabriel Davis, if I remember correctly, mm-hmm. That's his name, okay?
Yep.
Darius Williams. They're literally tugging on each other. The official has no business interfering with a play like that. Let him play. Let him play. We watch the players play. We understand that there's certain obvious things that you just can't allow to transpire because rules are rules, and we get all of that. But when something is going on and it's even keel, it's 50-50, it's me against you, with the game on the line and the official is the one that makes the call to save the day, and it's so highly questionable, I think that qualifies as robbery. And that's what I think was transpiring here.
It was robbery, John.
He's right.
It was robbery.
Stephen A's right. Are you telling me, if you go back and show those officials, are you telling me that the Bills didn't do that to Aaron Donald the whole game and they didn't throw a flag every time that happened?
No. I mean,
they had no answers for him. Aaron Donald was all over Josh Allen the whole game.
And look, this idea that you called the game the same way in the fourth quarter, at the end of the fourth quarter, as you do in the first quarter, is just BS.
No,
it's good, just BS.
Good officials manage the game and they know time and score. Any official I've ever talked to will tell you that they're fully aware that they're deciding the outcome of a game in that situation. And that's why, unless you're sure that that's an obvious pass interference, you don't call it. And Stephen A. made a key point here. They were going at each other. You use the phrase hand fighting. That's how I looked at it. They were both trying to clear space. And if you watch this play, you can't throw that flag. Okay, so having said all this, Mace,
yeah.
I love the way the Rams look after three
games.
Rams
are great. Rams look really, really good.
That comeback, when it got to be 28-10,
yep.
I thought, you know what? They're not dead. And when it got to be 28-17,
yep.
I said the Rams are winning this game. You know, they have so much firepower, and so their offensive play calling is so good that if you don't cover Robert Woods deep, Cooper Kupp will kill you. The running backs this year, unlike last year when Gurley, for whatever reason, couldn't really activate, Darrell Henderson and Malcolm Brown are both really good. They're good in this offense. McVay is a video game head coach who will call any play. Didn't you feel like as soon as they started getting the ball into the end zone, 28-10, 28-17, that they were coming like a train?
Oh, yeah. No, they were coming really, really hard. And, you know, I think
if there was 1 minute left on the clock, they would have come down and won the game at the end.
Yeah, you're right on the offense looks like a finely tuned machine. Even in the first half yesterday, when they couldn't punch it into the end zone, I think Johnny Hecker only punted once yesterday. Is that possible? Johnny Hecker punted only once? I think they moved the ball every time they had it. So
yeah.
Offensively, they have no
team.
Issues.
Love their team.
The defense is my big concern. They definitely did not have a good first half defensively, but I love the way the team looks. And I know we was robbed. I know that for a fact. I watched it with my own eyes. In my mind, we're 3-0, even though the record says 2-1. And by the way, the next two games, home to the Giants at Washington. Those are two extremely winnable. In fact, the Giants, they are 13-point favorites over the Giants.
They should be. Giants are awful. But the Fez, what is up with the Fez?
The Fez has missed 2 weeks in a row.
Like last year, Fez went 12 out of 13. Steve Fezzik, our gambling guy, he'll be on Thursday. And for some reason, he's the only guy in the country who hasn't figured out that the two worst teams in the NFL are both in New York.
Yeah. Yeah, they are awful. Yeah. They are awful.
The Giants, the Giants and the Jets are battling for. Boy, you know what's interesting? The Giants and the Jets both have young quarterbacks.
Yes,
Sam Darnold and Daniel Jones.
Yep.
If one of those teams gets the number one pick, there's no way you're passing on Trevor Lawrence. So all of a sudden, one of those guys could be our guy, Sam Darnold, who we like a lot. Is gonna get Josh Rosen out of New York.
I think the worst team in New York should be relevated. What do they call that in soccer?
Relegated.
Yeah, they should be relegated.
But who do you bring up? Alabama?
Oh, that's a good point.
Clemson?
Bring up Bama. Yeah, Clemson. It's a good idea. It was a great game. It was a fun game to watch. I was devastated at the end, but the thing that makes up for it is I know they're really, really good. So I feel good about that, even though we was robbed.
Mace, I know it's only three games, but I can tell by watching them, they're a Super Bowl contender. They really are. The only teams in the NFC I've seen that I get this feeling watching so far, Seattle and Green Bay.
Yeah.
And I know
yeah.
you're not big on Tampa Bay. They're coming. Tampa Bay's
coming.
Yeah,
I'm not big on Tampa. I'm huge on Seattle. I think Seattle is the team to beat.
Yeah, but Seattle and Rams get them twice.
Yeah.
So, but there's
that little wizard, Russell Wilson. He has screwed us so many times.
Yeah, that guy is, I mean,
he's amazing.
He's a magician.
Yeah.
All right. So of all the guys on the Lakers that I'm happy for.
Yep.
I think the guy I might be happiest for is Alex Caruso. And one of the reasons why is Caruso is living his dream. Literally, this is a guy who went undrafted, had to convince somebody to put him on their G League team. The Lakers did. He worked his way up through a two-way contract.
Yeah.
He's one of those guys on a two-way contract. And now, Mace, he's not only on the team, but he's a key rotation contributor who has found some type of this yin-yang rhythm with LeBron where the two of them together are fantastic. But I think I'm happier for Caruso than almost anybody.
Yeah, he's a great guy, and he is going to join us coming up next. Mason Ireland, 710 ESPN.